This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It was April 7th yesterday, and it was snowing in Detroit. It's not about that. It's about this guy finally getting a control on his emotions, which I don't really think that he's ever going to do. And, you know, the emotional meter that he seems to have, it's funny because I think it works both ways for him. I think part of that is what got him here to this point. But the other problem now is it's what I think is preventing him from being maybe as good as he should be. He just unravels. And I've defended him. I've defended him for a long time. I truly have. I think it's been, you know, a little inaccurate how he's pitched so far. Now, he brought this on himself with an awful first year, so I can't defend him there. But I thought he had a really nice bounce back last year, even though he had a couple of moments where you're like, all right, here we go again, including the postseason. I just don't know how I could possibly trust him. And I really don't. I don't trust him. And I'll tell you what, something else too I wanted to get into. We get back to the phones here. BT and Sal, 888-808-1019. Is the more I watch Jazz Chisholm, he is becoming the player that is almost, not yet, but I'm going to have to keep an eye on this, forcing me to maybe reevaluate my favorite statistic. What do I always this always came down to the Lindor stuff. I would always reference what? Go ahead. For those in the back, OPS. I would always reference OPS. And OPS is generally a great indicator of what somebody's doing. He's got a little pop. He's on base. He's doing a good job. Well, his OPS is almost 920. But then you watch him, and he's played nine games. He struck out 17 times. 17. On what planet is that acceptable for somebody who, you know, in my opinion, is batting cleanup way too much? I don't like him in the cleanup spot at all. And I don't like his approach. And I'm happy he's on the team. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I think Jazz has value. I think he's going to wind up with 30 to 40 steals and 25 to 30 bombs. But he's simply not going to be on base enough, and he's simply not going to give you competitive at-bats enough when you need him, provided, you know, especially in a spot of protection for either Aaron Judge or Bellinger, or, you know, when Stanton comes back, if he comes back. I know it's an early read, at least this season, and he was here for a big chunk of last year. I'm uncomfortable with his approach, you know? He is a free swinger who just too often comes up empty. You know, he puts himself in awful counts. He misses off change, you know, off speed, curveballs, changeups by a mile. He's looking to jack everything. So that's one of these instances here. You know, I am an OPS touter. Touter of OPS. I love it. Don't get me going on OPS Plus. I'll get really giddy. But it's very misleading early on. Oh, wow, Jazz. Got a 920 OPS. Must be doing damage. And they basically had one massive game, which has really, you know, skewed those numbers. So that is a story that I'm here to watch as well. Of course, the Rodon stuff, the Rangers, we hit that before. We do a little Knicks Celtics later on. Mets fans, I don't know if it represented all the bodies in the building, but they had the second highest number of at least tickets sold last night. So I get a little bit of everything here today. 888-808-1019 is the number. Get back to the calls. John's in. Let's get this going here. John is in Port Jefferson. What's going on, John?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Hey. Great show as usual.
Thank you, bud. What's up?
I tell you, the Rangers are, you know, it's just, you can't always blame the goalie. When you have that many shots, you cannot stop them. He does let in some bad ones, but he's constantly playing. Quick, yes, older. They put him in there to fill in. he can't play every day also, but they don't have the defense. They got one of I feel they got rid of one of the best defensive players in the league by Trouba. Fox is not, you know, expectations. So what do you think about the guys as far as the defense in front of them besides all the other guys not doing their job?
I don't know. You get the wrong guy to talk down, to break down defense for the Rangers. I don't know. Here's what I do know, all right? I do know that last year, and I believe the month was January, John, where Shesterkin was atrocious. And, like, he was wretched. And then Quick really, you know, played great, stabilized things. I'm almost positive it was January. I don't think it was February. I'm pretty sure it was January. I'll double-check that. So let me get this straight. The highest-paid goalie, we're going to make excuses for him now. Oh, the defense doesn't do this, and this doesn't happen here, and this is wrong here. Well, how about elevating? Aren't, like, the best ones supposed to elevate and kind of mask some of those deficiencies? I don't know. Let's get it straight. Get it right. Get it going. God, what a meltdown this year. Now, Hoff, does this stack up? Or how does this stack up? Let's say, I want to personalize it for you. Let's take the 2022 Mets, which I know did not end well for you. I get that. We all know how it ended. And then 2023, when Buck was sent packing, and the Mets looked very different. Now, it's of course, pre-Soto, whatever, but and pre-Vientos explosion, which came a year ago. The Mets going into the 2023 season off of 2022 and the Rangers season this year coming off of last year. It's not saying it's apples to apples. I know that it's not. I understand that. It's definitely not because, you know, it's just not. And if you know both teams and both sports, you know that it's not. But is it that comparable in terms of disappointment for you, Hoff? Like, you compare that. I'm very, because you're the biggest Ranger fan here.
Yeah, no, well, I'm up there. Boomer probably beats me by a little bit.
On this show, you're by far the biggest.
That is true. Yeah, Sal's not a Ranger fan. He's an Islander fan.
And Boomer's a massive one, and Moran loves his Ranger. No, we got a lot of good Ranger fans here.
The reason why I say this is a bigger deal is because this team has been consistently in the playoffs. They've made it to this mark plenty of times, Eastern Conference Finals. Overall, over the past decade, they've been in this type of thick of it in the playoffs. And to be that close last year, to beat the team that, or to lose to the team that eventually would win the Stanley Cup, and then not even make the playoffs. They did nothing, basically, to make this team better. That is frustrating. That is terrible. And meanwhile, with the Mets in 2022, I feel it was a tease. You know, we didn't think they were that good.
No.
They kind of just found their way, and that was exciting, but I always knew that they needed more improvement. Like we talked about during the trade deadline, you know, when they're bringing it down rough with Daniel Vogel back, it's like, what are we doing here?
Rough.
I don't think that team was sustainable. I think they had to do what David Stearns did. They came in, they kind of reworked some things, more knowledgeable people. Mm-hmm. They kind of lucked into 2022. So it was upsetting that they didn't make the playoffs again the next year.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, yeah, well, that makes sense.
But what was the Rangers' mindset going into the last season? You didn't think they'd win the President's Cup.
Last season.
You knew they'd be good.
Last season, I thought they were going to be really, really good.
Like,
I did.
The best team?
Yeah.
Okay.
And especially the way that Shesterkin was playing, too. It's like, yeah, when you have a great goalie, you should be in that thick of it. You should be talking about Stanley Cup. Like, I thought that they should have beaten Florida. They could have. They didn't. They played terrible against them, even in the regular season. Playoffs, they got, you know, dismantled. But they had the team that was the second best team, I think, in the NHL last year. They just couldn't beat the Panthers.
Well, let's get back to the calls here. Also, get back to the baseball stuff. BT and Sal here on the fans. Brandon, Tierney, Sal, the Cotta Show. 888-808-1019. You heard the Rodon stuff. You heard what I added there with Jazz Chisholm. 9 games, 17 whiffs. I don't know how you have him in such a prominent spot as you get to, you know, these more important games. I know it's very early, and I think Jazz has a lot of talents, but he's got a very strange approach, and I can't have him hitting behind Judge in October. Hey, we're inside of the Town Fair Tire Studio. Our friends at Town Fair remind you that you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. And also, just a heads up, you guys want to jump in on the Yankees, you could obviously do that. Earlier starting time, they shifted that around. So, pregame coming up in about 20 minutes. And also, the first pitch is at 1:10. That's on 660. So, we'll ship that over there. And it's the free Odyssey app to listen to me, BT and Sal. Keep it here. Evan and Tiki, 101.9 FM. Also, the free Odyssey app. If you guys want to go back and forth, you can obviously rewind for free and get up to speed, kind of see what's going with both there. So a busy day and a busy time of the year. There's a lot going on. Mike's in Greenfield, New Jersey. Mike, what's happening? Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Mike. What's going on?
So I was just wondering what you guys are thinking about how Laviolette said that he didn't go in the locker room. Well, he doesn't go in the locker room after the games. You know, I feel like he's not getting enough heat. This team is definitely underperformed, and I think it has a lot to do with coaching all around. You referenced about Kako earlier, so just wondering what you guys thought about
that. All right, well, let me ask you this here, Mike. Do you think, and I gave you my answer before, I'm assuming you watched the whole game. You're a big Rangers fan. Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you think, because I usually start with this kind of a question, because this applied to the Jets with Sala. Do you think that the Rangers were ready to play hockey last night? Think they were ready?
Yeah.
So do I.
I think they were ready last night,
yeah.
But I don't think that the coach is doing much except just standing back there chewing some gum. Like, he isn't talking to anyone. I that's just my opinion on it. Normally, I'm not a fire-the-coach guy, but I just feel like this team checked out on him a while ago, and I'm not really sure why.
Well, listen, at some point, you're going to need some new blood here. I mean, that's basically what I'm saying. I don't know enough to know if they checked out. I don't want to misrepresent, you know, Laviolette. I don't want to do that to him, but I mean, generally, I am a believer in letting grown men be grown men and do their job. I mean, you're not going to be up there behinds in a locker room, you know, after every game. To me, the more important discourse is what happens before the game and what happens on the ice at practice. And that's what I'm looking for. You know, like, let's say, I mean, listen, if this was the Knicks, I'd be screaming bloody murder. I really would be. But, like, if the Knicks were battling for a playoff spot right now, Knicks have, what, 4 games to go? And I think the Rangers have 5? Yeah, Rangers are 6 back with 5 to go. Let's say the Knicks were in the same exact spot. I'd be all over it. I mean, Tom Thibodeau, he'd be gone, you know. But I don't know if it's the same dynamics. I mean, when you pay somebody and you give him that kind of money, I'm not saying it's all his fault, but you got to do your job. Again, I'm just not a big believer. I'll even take Aaron Rodgers, right? Now, I wanted Aaron Rodgers to come back to the Jets last year. I also very much on the record where I wanted the new regime to make their choice. I did not want Woody Johnson to shove Aaron Rodgers down the throat of Muji and Glenn. And he didn't, unless you think that he was the one who absolutely said, you're no longer a Jet. And some people do think that, whatever. But I was open-minded because I thought that Aaron Rodgers could still play. There was evidence the second half of the season that he rediscovered what he didn't have in the first half. And I was absolutely amenable to running it back with him, maybe draft an old lineman and see what happens. Piece it together, all right? And kind of rebuild on the fly, get Glenn off to a good start, get some wins, and maybe have somebody, you draft somebody, whatever, you find an interesting quarterback project, and you go from there. And that could be maybe a transition that would have worked out for the Jets. But, see, to me, like, I can't exonerate Rodgers, even though there were reasons that I think hijacked the Jets' chances to be good. One was coaching. They were as penalized as anybody. They didn't play with great purpose and passion. I mean, Sauce Gardner seemingly had zero interest in tackling anybody last year. And if you watch the Jets, you know what I mean. So I looked at, but I also realized that Aaron Rodgers had at least 4 or 5 occasions where he had the football, he had a chance to get a win, and he didn't do anything. Whether it was picks against Minnesota in London, whatever it may have been. And I know there were missed field goals in Denver and some other situations where other malfunctions led to the Jets losing. But Aaron Rodgers had a chance to elevate despite what was happening around them. And I know that it's not a perfect world in front of Shesterkin. Do your job better. Do your job better. 888-808-1019. Also, obviously, a lot of Yankee stuff. Stevie is in Bayside. Steve, what's happening?
What's up, BT? Hey. Look, going into the season, I thought we felt that they had enough pitching, but we really didn't know what to expect from this lineup.
True.
So to see what's been, and last year, forget about it. You know, after the 5-hitter, you were just waiting for the top of the lineup again. This year, what you've been getting out of 5 through 9, what you've been getting out of the young guys, Ben Rice, the way he's not just the results, but just the way he's getting, how hard he's hitting the ball. Volpe with the torpedo bat. I mean, look, it's only 10. You know, it's only. I think it's 11 or 12 now, but it's only a handful of games, mm-hmm. So you can't go too crazy. But just early signal, you have to like what you're seeing from this Yankee lineup.
I do. No, I absolutely do. Steve, I would totally agree with that. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm looking at this now. Thanks for the call there, Steve. Think about all the stories, all the variables, right, that we talked about with the Yankees and the Mets, me and Sal, for months leading up to the season. For the most part, most of them from a Yankee perspective, and even and the Met pitching as well, but focusing on the Yankees now, have slanted favorably. Like Goldschmidt looks just a lot more viable than Rizzo did. And for a one-year, $12.5 million contract, where you kind of kick the tires on, you know, a guy who had a rough year in totality, but finished up really strong, seems energized to be a Yankee. You know, some of the numbers that are obviously very important in terms of measurements, support, that run last year, whether it's exit velo, whatever it might be. So I thought there was enough juice in his hands the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season. I was okay with Goldschmidt. Check, looks good. Then you get to Ben Rice so far. And listen, things could change, but I'm reacting to the call. Then you get to Ben Rice. And what do we hear all winter about Ben Rice? Ah, look, he put on 12 to 15 pounds. Oh, functional weight, as they call it, right? Ah, look, he's hitting the ball harder. Oh, exit velo. And they said this all the time. Like, they reference his exit velocity all the time. Well, guess what? His exit velocity, and I don't think there's usually, for me, a lot of carryover from spring to when it starts. Whether it's a pitcher putting up zeros, whether it's a young hitter impressing, like Volpe did a couple of years back to win the job. Because we all know pitchers are kind of just finding a groove and throwing a lot of straight fastballs early. And hitters are generally ahead of pitchers in February and March. And it's going to result in some slanted numbers in favor of the hitter. So, but with Ben Rice, here's another check. The exit velo is transferring. It's ridiculous, some of the numbers. He's actually got more hard hit balls than Judge. Then you get to Judge, who right now, he's the MVP. Volpe looks better. Dominguez, think about the amount of time we talked about Dominguez when he started off really. See, it wouldn't have been as big a story if it didn't happen right away. Like, if Dominguez would have been solid, you know, just kind of blended in for the first week or two of spring training games, and then he had a little blip or two, I don't know that it would have quite hit the or have the energy that it did early on. But when it was right out of the chute, and that was coupled with, on top of some late season follies in left field, when the Yankees gave him every chance to beat out Verdugo to win the job, it was impossible not to harp on that. Well, guess what? Check. Looks pretty good. Another thing that's gone favorably. Now, listen, I knew Trent Grisham had power. He had some numbers with the Guardians where he was pretty good in smaller samples, and obviously he's not doing this the whole season, but he's proven bare bones minimum to be a hell of a fourth outfielder and probably slightly beyond that. Now, the two things that haven't worked out yet, Bellinger hasn't really hit, and Austin Wells, after an early start, some early power, including opening day at the stadium, we were there for that, he is not really hitting. But there have been more favorable responses to the Yankee questions than the negative ones. And that portends really good things, I would think, for the rest of the year. Provided Heel comes back healthy, and Clark Schmidt comes back healthy, Judge stays healthy, and Devin Williams isn't a mess in the back of the bullpen. And I'm not even prepared to go there yet, but you better believe that's a story that I'm watching. Because he's been a little shaky so far, and it coincides with, you know, having the Brewers' season torpedoed by Pete with that home run. I got to see him bounce back at some point. It's early, but, you know, next couple of weeks here, that scope of criticism is going to get loud and unavoidable if Devin Williams doesn't start looking sharper. Here's the batting order for the Metsies. Lindor, who's suddenly up to 242. It's getting up there. He looks to be at least avoiding the dread of seasons past. He's showing some signs lately. Soto, Nimmo, 1, 2, and 3. It's been that way all year. Nimmo, 4. He's got to get going. Vientos, you know, he's just been a mess. And I think that is a story that is going to be very interesting. And I love Vientos. You know that. But he just looks way off. And with a young kid, with nothing really to gravitate toward in terms of a database, like a database of memories and experiences, you know, that head starts swimming. Baseball, that is not a good place to be in the batter's box when you ain't feeling good. So hopefully he snaps out of it. But he's at 114. All right, Marte Taylor, I'm not a Marte guy. Marte, Taylor, Beatty, Sanger, Holmes on the mound, 0-1, 2.89 ERA. So that is the Mets. And just checking the weather here, we get back to the calls, 888-808-1019. Really more for the winds. I know it's not going to rain today. I believe it's going to, let's see. The forecast here in Queens hourly, it's got to be 20-something mile per hours. Oh, my God, how the hell are you playing this? So they start at 4, and at 4 o'clock, dude, you're looking at 26-mile-per-hour winds. How do you play? How do you play?
I mean, is the ball, which way is the wind going?
Going out to right field.
All right, home runs.
Let's go. There you go, Soto. Starts to crank a few, you know? Hey, if Pete keeps going oppo, Pete might bang two out there. No, that's crazy. Like, to me, and I said this before, I don't know how it came up, but like the wind is always the most frustrating thing. I can even, you know, a little wet, a little damp, playing golf, whatever, playing baseball, a little drizzle, fine. The wind, it's unnerving. Everything about the wind changes the temperament. Think about the way you grip a club. You're like, oh, I gotta power through this. And it changes everything. Same with gripping a ball. Just playing with the wind is tough.
Now, we've played wiffle ball. We know that a wiffle ball can just go soaring with the wind. You could start it one way, go the other way.
Huh.
When you're throwing a fastball, you're throwing a curveball, whatever it is, that's not going to change the pitch, right?
100% it will. There's no question. Think about this. If you've got a wind that's blowing, all right, because I don't know exact north-south from the this position at Citi Field. So Mets are playing today, and Holmes is on the mound, and you're looking at you're watching SNY, and you've got the center field camera, right, which is a little bit off-center. And let's say the wind is blowing from center field toward the third base dugout. Well, as a righty, now if he throws, I know he's a sinker guy, power sinker, but if he throws a curveball, which for him is going to go right to left, if the wind's going the other way, that curveball's not going to break as sharply because it's being met with resistance. I know that this sounds geeky, but I'm just answering your question. If the ball is meant to go right to left, but the wind's going left to right, it's going to offset that, and it could either result in a hanger or an inability to pound the zone.
So it's gonna
How's
be
that a, for an answer?
It's going to be a messy game is basically what you're saying.
That's the short answer.
A lot of walks.
That's the short. Well, maybe. That is the short answer. The pop-ups are going to be an adventure out there. My goodness. BT and Sal, 888-808-1019. Ranger fans are absolutely disgusted, and you should be. And I got to say something. Like, so a caller brought it up, and I did not watch the Rangers. I did obviously want to see what happened. They got dusted last night. And the irony is that they were ready to play. Like, if you see, oh, God, Rangers lost 5-1. The hell happened here? Well, it's really not indicative of how the game started. The Rangers had 12 of the first 13 shots. They didn't do anything after that. I mean, I think three of the next four shots that the Habs took found the net, and then it was lights out. And a caller brought up the comments by Laviolette postgame, and I kind of dismissed it. And I said, well, it's not really his style. And the comments, and I'm sure Ranger fans, you know about this because you're a diehard Ranger fan, but I want everybody to be up to speed and then try to imagine, like, if one of our Boone or Mendoza or a football coach said this, Dable, after a tough game. So Laviolette said, you know, well, he was asked, what did you say after the game? And he said, basically, quote, I didn't say anything after the game. I don't go in a locker room after the game. And now a caller's saying that to me, and I'm like, well, again, I don't love it, but they're grown men, and they probably know what they did wrong, and they'll go to practice, and they'll look at the film. To me, the more important aspect would be what happens in terms of a conversation before the game. And because they were ready to play, now they haven't always been ready. They haven't always been ready to play these games lately. Last night they were. But I almost put more emphasis on that than I would, you know, what a coach comes in and says when you get your brains kicked in 5-1. But this is a quote. I mean, this gets you fired. That's all there is to it. He was asked, what message do you have for your team? And he said, quote, I don't have a message right now. What? I don't go into the locker room after the game. Now, that's the full context there. And that hits me, admittedly, very different from the way it was communicated to me by a caller. Number one, you don't have a message right now? It's your job to have a message, dude. That's literally your job. Your job is to have a message for when something goes awry so that it could change the bad state of your team. And there's other aspects to the job, of course. Establishing the lines, you know, dealing with injuries, inspiring. I don't have a message right now. That is absolutely gross. Wow. I mean, Listen, you've heard me flip out a few times over the Jets and some other things. I'm pretty sure Aaron Glenn, now, this would be the only way Aaron Glenn would do this. Like, if he says, let's say the Jets lose week one, or, yeah, well, I'll just say week one, 37-10, and it's gross. 13 penalties, 3 fumbles. It's absolutely awful, right? You know, they give up 200 ground yards rushing, and they say, you know, coach, what message do you have for your team right now? And Aaron Glenn said something like this. You know what, guys? I understand the question. I'm not sharing it. They'll know what my message is when I get in that room. But I'm not sharing it with you. That's for us. You saw it. You saw what you saw. You know, you're going to see the film again. It's probably going to look worse than it did in real time. But right now, I don't have a message because that's not going to mean anything. I'll talk to them man to man. Okay, that's like, I got it. And maybe that's what Laviolette meant. That is not a good quote at all. Tom, you don't escape that quote. Tommy's in Staten Island or on Staten Island. Tommy, what's happening, bud? How you doing?
Hey, BT. Thanks for taking my call. How's it going?
Everything's pretty good. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, I agree. Laviolette most likely is going to be fired. But, I mean, when does it end? Three coaches in the last 5 years. And I tell you what, the real problem for me is the core of this team.
Yeah.
You know, particularly Zibanejad and Kreider.
Yeah.
You know, we can always blame the coaches, but like you said earlier, when do the players, when does it come down on the players?
Well, there's been a lot of guys that have come up small in the postseason, and we've talked about this, Tom. Me and Sal hit it last year, you know, and it's when you look at a core, and this applies to any sport, you know, but when you look at the core and you're like, all right, this just isn't it, you have to react. You have to react. And that's why I started this entire Rangers conversation, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes ago. I'm like, you got to take a wrecking ball to it because I don't think there's any way to really salvage this. It's just unacceptably bad. It's unacceptably short of expectation. And there's got to be consequences. Let me get Stephen Marlborough. Steve, BT and Sal, what's happening?
Good. Your show is great as always. I'm a big Met fan since 1962.
Okay.
And I have a couple concerns. The Mets are pitching lights out. Their bullpen has been remarkable. And that's the thing that I was surprised at. I thought they'd be hitting, which you're really not, other than Alonso. But I have a couple concerns. One, Mark Bienzel. Maybe he's a flash in the pan. Maybe it's too early to say that. I don't know. That's number one.
Okay.
And number two, my second concern isn't really a concern because he doesn't deserve to be in the majors. He's awful, Beatty. But once McNeil comes back, I'm sure he'll be sent down. But the thing that concerns me is as great as the bullpen is, I don't trust Diaz. Every time he comes in, he makes it interesting. All right? And that's my concern. Maybe it's time for him not to be the closer. Maybe Buto or somebody else. I don't know.
Listen, if this keeps up here, Stephen, thanks for the call. We might have a dual closer issue here for both the Yanks and the Mets. I'm not there with Diaz. I'm not there with Devin Williams. I'm just not. I'm watching the game last night. It was pretty apparent that Stanek was filthy. I mean, his slider was absolutely disgusting last night. I think it was the second one. Even was it Keith? Was there? I think it was Keith or Ronnie. Who was doing the game last night? I don't even remember. So I was bouncing around between the college hoops. I think it was Keith. I'm pretty sure it was Keith. But he reacted to Stanek's second slider. If Stanek said, yo, I'm going to throw a slider on the black, good luck hitting it, you couldn't hit it. It was an untouchable, perfectly executed slider. And I think he only threw like 9 or 10 pitches, and 8 of which were strikes. Now, Stanek was really good. But now Diaz is the closer for now. He just is. Now, the other issues, the Vientos, he called them, well, you didn't label him a flash in the pan. You said you fear he might be. I disagree only because of what he showed in the postseason. If the Mets had, let's say the Mets were 81-81 last year, right? And they had, you know, no real pressure coming off the previous year, no real expectations, which they did not have, by the way, going into 2024. You know, and even if Vientos started the season in the minors and eventually got the call up, and he had a good year, you know, 20 home runs, 275, some ribbies, nice OPS. You know, there's really no pressure there. Well, there's different pressure. There's internal pressure to prove that you belong in the bigs. And that's a real thing. and that swallows up a lot of young players. That might be happening to Beatty. I don't know. To kind of address very quickly the other aspect of your concern, Beatty, has nothing to say when you hit an 050. Kid, you either hit and you stay, or you don't and you go. It's that simple. But Vientos is different because of what he did in October. That leash and that runway for him to get it going has to be longer. I believe internally it is. Now, that game against the Marlins a couple of days ago where, you know, he didn't run one out and he was chastised by his teammates and by his manager and his first base coach, and he didn't attack that foul ball well, and Aaron throw to first base. Like, he's got to clean up some other stuff. That the optics of his season so far are bad. But I don't think he's a flash in the pan. I think he's going to hit. The NCAA tournament, to me, it's dead. It is so different. You know, and I always try to delineate between, is it different when, because there's a lot of things that are different to me. I don't know. Is it Hoff? Is it different because I'm different? I don't think I'm that different, but I think it's different. Even the Masters, I used to love the week of the Masters, but no Tiger Woods, no Phil Mickelson, the live split, the greed. Ugh. You know, once John Rahm, and I love John Rahm, but once he bounced to live, it was a hard sell for me. I still watch it. It just doesn't feel the same, you know, and neither does the NCAA tournament. Now, I don't mean when I was there with St. John's and the Big East tournament. That was amazing. But I go back to, and maybe it's different. But then again, my son is really into it. So maybe it's just an age perspective, and maybe I need to get over it. But I'm curious how many of you who are not 10 years old like my son and my daughter's age, you couldn't care less about last night. I watch it, and when I was growing up, you know, it happened to coincide with St. John's being great, and they went to the Final Four, you know, and I was playing basketball, and I was in love with it, and, you know, they had pros everywhere, and so did Georgetown, and Villanova was in the Final Four, so you had three out of the four teams from my favorite conference ever at the Final Four. The coaches had personality. You know, Thompson was this imposing, massive figure and titan of the game that you either loved or, well, everybody feared Georgetown, loved or hated, but you had a reaction to Coach Thompson. You know, little Louis, you know, like a little Italian grandfather, everybody loved him, especially if you're a St. John's guy, New York guy. Rolly, you know, kind of same thing, fiery, loud, a little disheveled, and a little sloppy all over the place. You know, and that was the beginning of, at least for me, my golden age, because from there it went into, you know, Louisville and Denny Crum, and now it's the rise of Duke, and they're coming, you know. And then, of course, Bobby Knight winning with the Hoosiers, Steve Alford back in 87. That's the jump shot with Keith Smart. And then Kansas begins their ascent with Larry Brown, and then Michigan, Seton Hall. And then it's a local thing with the Pirates and PJ. And then it's back-to-back years. One went the Rebels' favor. One went Duke's way with Jerry Tarkanian and Coach K and Bobby Hurley, you know, throwing up and getting the runs before the first time where they got blown out and coming back and with a vengeance and in beating a team that I didn't think anybody could beat with Larry Johnson. It just felt different. It just felt very different. The game's very different. And I got to be honest, part of it clearly is because of the portal. Not even so much the NIL, though I do think that ties into the portal. Let's not be naive. You jump into the portal because you want more money. I think you do it because you want more money, probably more so than because you want more minutes, which is the way it used to be. That's why people used to transfer. They weren't getting any burn, weren't getting run. So they would leave, you know? And it's very different. And I understand that. I'm not trying to fight City Hall with this. I believe the kids should get paid. But watching the tournament here and now seeing how the mid-majors, which would always slay a giant or two, you know, going back to St. Peter's, that's the end of the road with that. It's never going to happen again, really. Going back to VCU, going back to George Mason, like, those were just amazing times. And that's over. And as long as you guys can understand that, you could probably go about your business and appreciate the NCAA tournament. And, like, you know, as long as St. John's is in there, well, and obviously the other Big East teams, which I always follow. But I'd be less than truthful if I didn't say that my connection to the tournament, my interest didn't wane as it went on without St. John's. It absolutely did. There's no question. And I think a lot of it is for the reasons I mentioned, the NIL and the portal. But also, there's just not many coaches that have any real personality anymore. I mean, think about it. Danny Hurley, who's a nutball, and I like Danny. I say that with a smile. And people trying to run him out of the game. Oh, he's too tough on refs. Ah, he curses too much. He's too egotistical. He's a lunatic. He's out of his mind. He's insane. He's crazy. It's bad optics. It's what you want. I just feel like it's a bunch of cookie cutters with a bunch of coaches, personalities, with a bunch of rosters that nobody really knows because it changes year to year. And it's very hard to consume the tournament the way we used to. So I think Hoff's a good example. Now I'm going to pull you back. I know you were busy with your Rangers last night, right? And we'll get back to the calls.
Well, and I was also at the Met game, too.
Oh, I didn't know you went to the Met game.
Yes, I froze my feet off.
You went to the game?
I went with Evan, yes. We said this before the season started. He invited me, and I was like, all right, I'll be locked in for that Monday. Monday after the opening weekend. We wanted to see how the crowd was going to be.
And I know what the number was, 28,000. There weren't 28,000 bodies.
No. Not even close.
Was it very desolate, or was it okay?
Yeah, it was desolate. But, okay. I mean, was disgusting.
And
I
wet.
Didn't want to go either.
Yeah, no, you held your word. That a boy. Was there a Rico, by the way, after it?
Oh, yeah, we did a drive-home Rico. It was great.
The drive-home together where you're driving and he's driving?
I drove, he drove, yes, and it was all legal. Don't worry about it, guys.
I got you.
Safe.
Okay, so you're at the Mets game. I know you're juggling the Rangers. You probably didn't care at all about the NCAA tournament game last night, did you?
True, but here's my thing: is it's different than you, and the NIL stuff has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I just personally speaking, I view college students as kids still. I do, so yeah. I'm never really into ridiculing and really breaking down and ripping apart how kids play on the court. I don't think it's right. I don't think that's just me. I don't think it's necessary. Like once you start getting paid money, which is weird, that's where the NIL comes in, right?
Yep,
that's where I'm torn. I'm like, well, now they're getting paid like professionals, so I guess I can do that, but I don't want to because I know these are still young kids.
Yeah, but you could still watch it, consume it, and not rip them. I haven't ripped them.
No, I know, but that's my instinct. My instinct is if I'm watching there, if I'm seeing them just chuck up threes and not really put up together a really good shot, I'm going, what am I watching?
Yeah.
I don't want to see this. I want to see professionalism, and they don't have it yet. That's what they have to learn.
So it's more of a style of play more so than, see, all right, I get it. It's funny you say the way you say it because I used to say this all the time. There was a point, not for many years, but where I was concurrently doing St. John's and Knicks stuff, right? And I would always separate the two, obviously two different teams and entities, but just the way I would levy criticisms would be very different. Like Eddie Curry being 35 pounds overweight and disinterested in playing basketball was very different. How I was going to get on a 19-year-old kid who shot 1-for-9. Understood. I agree with that. It's changed a little bit with the NIL, but not for me too much because they are now they might have more money in their pocket, but that doesn't accelerate the development of their minds. So they're still on the youngest side. I appreciate that. I get that. My issue is that twofold. Number one, all the coaches with personality have said, I'm done with this. Jay Wright, Coach K, Roy Williams. You know, I promise you, Tom Izzo's next. Like, Rick is one of the last ones who will say what's on his mind. So it's become very antiseptic. It's become fairly boring for me. And the other thing, too, like, if you don't have the threat of that great story beginning on Selection Sunday, as if, I saw this team play so-and-so in the MAC championship or in the Big Sky or the Big South, whatever, you know, somewhat obscure conference. Hey, they're a 12 seed. They could cause some damage, and then they actually do it. And even if you don't know any of their players, you jump in, and it's a fun story, which we immediately forget about once they lose, but it does give us a different presentation in March. And because now the mid-majors are basically a minor leagues for the Big Five in terms of transfer activity, the threat of upsets is gone, which changes the entire dynamic and profile of the tournament.
Well, no question.
Sucks.
And that's an issue right there, too, because you talk about, like, these coaches. It's not, like, when St. John's was taking on Arkansas, it was really more about Calipari versus Patino.
Yeah, that's what
you
heard.
Like, St. John's versus Arkansas, there's no blood there. There's no nothing. But what happens is, this is not Calipari's last stop, Arkansas. He's going to find another team that's going to want to pay him a lot of money. He's going to go somewhere else, and he's going to bring the transfer kids with him. That's what it is. I mean, look, Patino, you can't knock anything that he does. RJ Lewis walks away, and you already have kids coming over from other schools. Mm-hmm. It's great for the top coaches in the league, but there's still, again, you're missing that, like, I want to say, like, when I knew kids back in the day when I was watching college basketball,
yeah,
they were hanging around a little bit longer. They weren't there one and done. They weren't there for two and done. They were there building a team, and the coaches were there, and they were building a system, no?
Yeah, no, yes. There, I am at a point now, and again, I do Big East games where, now, there was a point where I knew, I'm not Rothstein here, every single starting five for obscure schools, but I knew all the guys that were going into the NBA. Even now the kids enter the NBA, I'm like, I haven't even really seen them play. That's becoming more and more obscure. The great irony, though, I know we'll break here, Dove, I got you. The great irony is that as much as I complain about the changes to college basketball and how it looks very different, really, it's the only way that St. John's would have gotten back on the radar. Think about the irony. Like, so it's weird. I complain about the portal, and I'm not really complaining about the NIL, but the lack of personalities and the coaches saying I'm done with this and the mishmash of conferences and the mid-majors gone and this and that. But yet, if it didn't change, St. John's would be a doormat like they were for so long. So I guess I got to live with it, but I do acknowledge the, aside from St. John's, the tournament itself felt very different this year.